You're listening to the Refined Hippie Podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Henson, and welcome to another episode. Today's episode is number 7. Lucky number 7, y'all. So I just actually learned why the number 7 is considered lucky, which I actually don't even think I had realized that people considered that a lucky number, which is kind of funny. Actually, I just thought of this. When I was in high school, my basketball number was 7, and I always loved that number. But anyways, so over the holiday, 4th of July, someone was playing or singing the song Dixieland Delight by Alabama, and it totally stuck in my head. And one of the lines is lucky number 7 living in heaven. And I was like, why is 7 considered a lucky number? So I Googled it, and apparently it has been thought of as a lucky number for thousands of years. And there's a lot of different reasons. There are 7 deadly sins, 7 wonders of the world, 7 days in the week. In the Bible, there's reference to it because apparently on the 7th day when God was creating the world or whatnot, he rested. So there's a lot of references throughout history to 7, and that's why it's considered lucky. So today's episode is extremely special and lucky to me because of my guest. My guest today is Derek McKee. Derek is a windsurfer, yogi, plant-based advocate, web developer, and also he happens to be my husband. So obviously I know his story really well and thought that he would be a perfect guest for the podcast because he has a very compelling and interesting story of healing. Derek struggled with sinus problems, back pain, acne for a large part of his life, and he wanted to try to heal it in whatever way he could. And through the suggestion of his sister, he started doing yoga. And soon after, he saw super profound benefits and wanted to further his practice. So he enrolled in a yoga teacher training program where he learned about meditation. He became a vegetarian and he felt so amazing and decided that he wanted to take his practice to the next level and deepen his practice. So he moved to Maui. We chat about his transformation, health, Maui, serendipitous events of things, you know, just falling into place and having faith and an open mind and where that can take you. We also chat about the struggles of trying to balance that type of lifestyle with social pressures, jobs, etc. Derek is obviously, like I said, plant-based, so we talk about his kind of path to that world, and I say plant-based, he's mostly plant-based. He does sometimes eat shrimp and oysters, so if you see him out and he's eating those things, I didn't say he was completely, just mostly. So I think you're going to really enjoy it. Obviously, I always have a great time talking to him. And we could talk all day, which we do. So without further ado, here is my interview with Derek McKee. Hey, Derek.
Hello, Rebecca.
Thanks for being on the podcast.
For sure.
I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get you on here. I've asked you, or I guess I brought it up like maybe a month ago.
A few times.
And
as a maybe.
I didn't think it would ever happen, but I think just because this episode is episode 7, I think that's the only way I got you on here.
Well, when we talked about it last night, I did like that was a prime number.
For those of you who don't know, Derek is a math lover. If that's technically an understatement, I suppose. That was one of your
math
majors,
and science.
So, AKA he's kind of a nerd.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that term too. I think that for the longest time I thought that as like a negative thing, but as I've gotten older, I think being a nerd is a really good thing, right?
I think it's changed a lot, especially with the advent of the internet.
Right. And like the 90s and the 80s, like every movie just like, I don't know.
Yeah, look at Stranger Things.
I know, we just finished watching Stranger Things last night, so that's why we're referencing that.
Yeah.
And they joke about nerds all the time.
They're pretty open and honest about that. And
right.
Everyone seems to think it's pretty cool.
I think it's pretty cool. So I was thinking about it the other day, how, you know, when you and I met, that I kind of thought that I was a healthy person, you know? I mean, you actually were a lot healthier than I was when we first met. That, like, you introduced me to quinoa. I had never even heard of quinoa before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, the closest thing that I got to eating something different and weird was couscous. Which was new back then anyways, right? I mean... Yeah.
Well, I had just moved back to Charleston. And I was, at that time, for sure, making an effort to be a healthy person. So...
Yeah.
And I remember you mentioning that, you know, you liked salads and vegetables.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Even though at that time you weren't vegan or gluten-free and you hadn't gone through your health journey.
Right.
Yeah, that was definitely something that kind of piqued my interest, because I had been vegetarian for almost 2 years just prior to that.
Right. Which we can get to later, but I always find that interesting, because now that, like, I'm a vegan now, people, which, you know, they do this, they constantly are like, oh, did you make Derek become a vegan or, eat plant-based? And I'm like, actually, he was vegetarian, like, for 2 years long before we even met. So,
I get that question all the time.
I know. Yeah. I know. So let's start with that.
No, I'm stoked. I love it.
I know, right?
I mean, you make it easier, you know.
True. I know, that's true.
If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't. I probably would not be. But the fact that
society makes it harder. Yeah.
Yeah, I strived for it, and it's definitely hard. Yeah.
And that's why you had stopped being vegetarian.
Yeah. Social pressures, I guess.
So, let's backtrack to when you were younger. You also were kind of introduced to, like, health and stuff with your mom.
My mom started us with that. You know, I guess I'm not sure exactly why that started, but I do remember from a young age, you know, being introduced to more vegetarian options and also alternative health, because my mom practiced, you know, some alternative health practices and vitamins, and, you know, we had a cabinet full of supplements.
Yeah. She might took it a little too far.
I think she may have. Yeah. And I remember, you know, when I was a kid, thinking, oh man, you know, I have to drink this this fish oil.
Ugh,
and
so bad.
Didn't smell so good.
It smells terrible. But, as a kid, geez.
But we ate hot dogs and other stuff.
Normal
too.
Normal kid stuff, yeah.
We just had an exposure to, you know, some of the other options that maybe some other kids hadn't.
That's also, you know, living where you lived as well, because pretty sure Bennettsville, with 10,000 people, didn't have those even options, you know. And like, there was nobody. I'd never even heard the term. I don't think I knew anyone who was vegetarian growing up. If I did,
wow,
yeah,
really?
I literally knew no one. I mean, now in my town, there's a lot more for sure. I mean, it's more mainstream, quote unquote, I suppose.
Yeah,
but yeah, I don't know anybody that was. I mean,
I think part of the reason that we went down that path was health issues at a young age. I remember, you know, starting since really as early as I can remember having severe sinus problems.
Right.
I had chronic sinusitis, and that lasted all throughout college. I mean, most of my friends in high school and in college, you know, if they hadn't seen me for a while, or even if you reference that time period, they'll remember. You know, the tissues, I always had to bring around tissues with me, and it was kind of a, you know, joke, you know, hey, Derek, do you need a tissue, or where are your tissues?
Oh, God. I mean, it was... And your friends still joke about this, too.
Oh, yeah, some of them, like, still love to give me a hard time about that.
Yeah, they tease you about it.
But I can laugh about it now, because...
You don't have that problem.
I don't have that problem anymore. Yeah. Thanks to yoga.
Yeah. So it cured me. So you had like sinus problems for what, like 20 years basically?
I mean, as I often say, I did not breathe out of my nose for like almost 20 years.
That's insane.
Yeah. I mean,
like, I can't even fathom that.
Serious. I slept, you know, with my mouth open. I talked, you know, breathed everything.
And you're a mouth breather.
Yeah, totally a mouth breather. Just like they say on Stranger Things. That hit home.
I know. You're like, I totally get that. Yeah.
You know, in Hawaiian, haole means, you know, one who doesn't breathe.
What?
Or something along those lines. You can look it up.
I always thought
that was interesting. Yeah, there's a connection between, you know, this breath and... I guess almost like a state of ignorance is what it kind of references.
So in Hawaii, a haole is who? Like the people who are not from the island? Is that's what?
Well, or it's just generally used to describe white person.
White people.
Now,
that's right.
But that's
not
what it initially meant.
Right. Or now it's a derogatory word for the white people.
In a sense, yeah. Derogatory,
of,
yeah. But the root came from, I guess, you know, further back. It was kind of like almost a spiritual thing, in that, you know, these people that came over didn't have the respect for the land.
Tale as old as time.
And they had, yeah. I think that was like, you know, kind of, I don't know if it's like a nickname, but that was like, you know, hey, these people, they don't have the mental, you know, honor, you know.
Yeah.
They don't think about these kinds of things.
They don't care about the planet.
And then it kind of just like a lot of things and morphed into, you know, that white guy. Here.
Yeah. Which, I mean, the white people come over to Hawaii and yeah, I would think don't have respect for the land. They come on for vacay.
Well,
and,
a lot of tourists,
you know,
I'd
the tourists, yeah. I'm not a local.
Yeah. And we shouldn't even say like race. It was
true.
You know, maybe I'm going a little too far saying that, but, you know, it's more of just like outsider.
Yeah.
And I think because so many were, you know, Caucasian, that it ended up being like a slang word for white person. Yeah.
Right. So you had the sinus problems though. So who introduced you to yoga then? Like you just did it by yourself or?
No. I think the first, if I was to be really honest, I think the first time I ever heard of yoga was through my sister. I think she's Daphne, my twin sister.
Oh, cool.
I have to add twin.
Yeah.
She'd be very upset.
She would be very upset.
I have a twin sister. She always corrects me.
Yeah.
I say sister and she says twin sister.
Your twin sister.
I can't remember why she mentioned it, but I remember her, you know, suggesting that I try it. And the initial impetus was for those health reasons, you know.
Like, so, but you had sinus problems and you had back problems. So
yeah.
Was it for both of those then?
Yeah. Actually, it was...
Maybe more the back problem.
It was more... I'll give you 1, 2, 3. Actually, this is kind of embarrassing to admit, but it was it was acne was the first thing.
Oh, yeah.
Back problems were the second. Right. And yeah. So, and then sinus problems, actually, I never thought about it until...
It helped it.
Yeah. And then I thought it was a temporary, you know, relief and it ended up being a permanent relief.
Yeah.
Fix. And I 100% attribute it to that.
Isn't that crazy?
And we can get more into that if you want, you know, but
yeah,
but
I mean, for sure.
But when I first was, you know, tried yoga.
That was you were in college? Like how old were you?
I was just out of college.
Right.
I had just like moved on, you know, on a whim to Hawaii.
Oh, so you were, that was the first time you tried yoga was in Hawaii?
Yeah.
How magical. Wow.
And it was actually towards the end of that first day. I had worked as a sailing instructor over my college summers and my boss. That's our cat.
And there's one of our cats.
Saying hello. She likes us talking.
She's the loudest. That's Eva Snow. If anybody has seen her on my Instagram stories, it's the white one. She's loud. Anyways.
Sorry about that.
Sorry.
But so my boss, he hooked me up with this job out in Maui in teaching sailing with an old friend of his who owned a business that supported, you know, had some contracts with some hotels out there, and we did all the water sports for them. And so I jumped at that opportunity. Yeah. That was like...
Who doesn't want to move to Maui after college? What?
Yeah. I remember being in college thinking like, why don't more people want to try this? You know? Because I was like, you know, I really kind of want to do that.
Yeah.
And then I was talking to my boss about it one day that summer. And he's like, I know somebody out there. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, I can hook you up. You know, maybe we can get you a job. Even though he hadn't talked to him in 10 years.
What?
Yeah. Awesome. And then he called him and, you know, introduced us and,
yeah.
And I got the job like immediately. And I was like, wow, that was easy. It wasn't until I got there that I realized that he, the new boss in Maui had me confused with another Derek.
Oh my God.
Who had called, you know, the same week to, he was from Maryland.
Odds? Two Derek.
Yeah. And that Derek was like, you know, a professional, well, not professional, but I think he sailed in college and stuff. And, so when I talked to him, he's like, sure, you know? And I was like, wow, that was really easy, you know? And then I got there, and as soon as I got off the plane, like, no joke, you know, somebody picked me up from the airport, and they took me straight to the beach and put me on a catamaran. And I was like, don't we need to go to the house first? And I'm like, no, I want to make sure you know how to sail. I was like, what? And then they tell me the story.
Oh, because he was like, oh, he was afraid.
Wow. Oh, yeah, they thought, so well, hey, if this guy, you know.
This is the wrong Derek. Maybe he can't sail.
Maybe he can't, you know, we can't like, we never vetted him. So they just literally threw me on a boat and had me go out with one of the other employees. And
but you did a great job, obviously.
I did a great job. And the guy's like, yeah, you know what you're doing. So let's go in. You know enough to teach the tourists.
Maybe
so.
You've already told me this, but yeah. What happened to the other Derek?
He was there too.
So, there were two Derek's.
Yeah, there were two of us.
So they hired both of y'all though. That's great.
Yeah. There was enough demand, I guess. Yeah,
that's good.
But I don't know. I mean, what would they have done if I couldn't sail or why I wasn't good enough? That I mean, would they have just been like, sorry, you don't have the job?
Sorry.
And then I'd be like, uh-oh, now what?
Yeah.
Because I was living in the employee, you know, in employee housing.
And, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So yeah. I would have been out on the street with no job.
We were young though. Yeah. Young people were resilient.
Oh yeah, I slept on a it was like a bed bug infested house, and I slept on the windowsill because all the beds were taken, and they were already, you know, the people that did have the beds all had bed bug bites.
Oh,
so I slept in a sleeping bag on a windowsill for like a week until a few of us, you know, rented a house together and got out of there.
Oh my gosh. But did you get bed bugs like everybody else?
I didn't. No, because I was on the windowsill.
Well,
another
lucky, you didn't get good sleep, but you didn't have bed bugs.
I was so, you know, elated to be there.
Yeah.
I was just in this like, okay, this is fine. It'll work out, you know, kind of mode. But anyway, towards the end of that stay is when I get, you know, I don't know. I don't know why I didn't do it, you know, towards the beginning, but it was really towards the end. I was there for about 6 months, and you know, I was always struggling with like the cystic acne that had my back and my chest, and sometimes on my face, and that was tough, you know.
It's terrible.
And I was getting older, and I was like, why do I still have this?
Right.
And I guess maybe I was talking to my sister or something, and I know she had mentioned yoga and trying it, and also I did have back problems. You know, I was diagnosed with. Like a juvenile, what's it called? Juvenile degenerative disc disease when I was 14. And that started getting worse in college. And
they had told you one time that you would...
That I might be in a wheelchair by the time I was 25 if I didn't do anything about
insane.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that was just like scaring, you know, a young kid to like do his exercises because, you know. But I didn't, you know, I was active, but I didn't really do the exercises they wanted me to do.
Yeah.
Which were kind of actually like similar to a few yoga poses. And I remember like, you know, running. I'm never much of a runner, but I tried to like try to get, you know,
jogging.
A little bit in shape and jogging when I was in college around the campus.
Yeah, I used to do that.
And I was not able to go to class because like I just slightly, you know, overextended on like walking off of a curb, and it like threw out my back. My back would just go out so easily, and then it would like be so much pain that I would like limp back like inch by inch, you know, with my feet. I couldn't do a full step to my bed, my dorm, just sit there all day, not go to class because I was in so much pain. And then I was like, I think I was like a junior, senior when that started happening. I was like, man, I need to do something about this.
Holy
you know?
Crap.
And I was surfing, and the surfing, you know, the bending in the back, you know, it's not that great because there's kind of compression in your mid to lower back.
Right.
So I was dealing with back pain, and that was a secondary thing.
And then the sinuses, you hadn't even thought that.
Yeah,
that would,
the sinus would... thing was like, that wasn't like just the asana. That was the, was that the neti pot?
Mm-hmm.
So I learned that some years later, you know, after I'd already kind of gotten on the yoga bandwagon.
Yeah.
Because it started for health, and then, you know, I had all these benefits, and then it kind of like was a snowball effect. So I kept up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, took my practice deeper. And
so you like moved back. So you were in Maui for 6 months,
mm-hmm.
and you got into yoga, and then you moved back, and you got, and then when you moved back to Charleston, you were like doing yoga like on the regular.
Yeah. Here. So yeah. There was a gap there. So when I moved back, you know, I was in my early 20s,
yeah.
And then, yeah, I moved to Charleston, and I continued to do yoga, but not like every week or anything like that. It actually took a few years to kind of like really get into a
routine.
Yeah. Like a schedule, yeah. Like a, you know, consistent practice. That's what I was looking for. And then through that, I discovered Holy Cow here in Charleston. Mm-hmm. I think it was, you know, one of the first studios that opened, and, you know, this is back when there's maybe only a handful of studios in the whole Charleston area.
Wow.
And, I did the teacher training program there at night to learn, you know, to deepen my practice with Tracy. You know, she's the owner, operator of that place. She's great.
She's so great.
And she introduced us to the neti pot.
Oh, wow.
Meditation.
Cool.
And just, you know, a different way of thinking about yoga, you know, because up to that time it was just a physical practice for me. Even though the mental, like, concentration part was there, I didn't know anything about, you know, the other, I don't know, like eight limbs, you know, they
right.
say.
Right.
So about the moral parts, you know, and the, yeah.
Yeah.
And
I
all
mean,
these
I would
different
love
practices.
To, yeah, I would love to get my teacher training just to learn all that stuff. I don't think I would ever be a teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of people say that and then they end up being teachers, but I don't know. Anyways, yeah, maybe one day.
Yeah, I never did any teaching. It's funny because I had the intention to do it. And I was having like such good results from like doing the neti pot, like religiously, you know, 5 days a week, every morning. And then I, you know, got to a point, I guess this is like 2007, where, God, it seems so long ago to say it out loud.
I know.
Here we are in 2019.
I know, it's freaky.
But yeah, this is 2007, and I was in grad school. I was working, you know, I can't remember, it was like 20 or 30 hours a week. But, you know, I had a day job, and I was doing this this yoga teacher training program at night, and I was just kind of like burnt out. And I decided that I wanted to go back to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And
screw it all.
And contacted some, you know, friends there, and I was going to work for my buddy who was a landscaper. You know, he's going to hook me up with a job. And I contacted a guy I used to live with, and, you know, there wasn't anything available, but I found a hostel online. I thought, hey, I'll just do the hostel thing. And my intention was to, deep in my practice even further and become a yoga instructor. I felt like I needed to learn more, and if I went back out there, you know, I had met some pretty wild people out there the first time. I remember, like, you know, picking up a hitchhiker. Hitchhiking was pretty common, still is more common in that state than the other 49, I think.
Isn't that funny?
But it was even more common back then. I feel like it's becoming less and less common there, just like it is nationally.
Yeah.
But anyway, picking up hitchhikers wasn't any big of a deal, you know, it's taken from one end of the island to the other or whatever. And I remember, you know, meeting this guy who was, you know, living in the woods or whatever. I mean, he was like full on yogi.
What?
And talking to him. And I picked up a raw food vegan.
Nice.
Yeah, he was wearing like genie shoes. And
oh my God.
It was really weird.
Only in Hawaii.
I felt like when I dropped him off, I was like, did that just happen? Or was that whole conversation,
was that a real
everything
person?
Yeah, was that like a real genie that I, did? I was like, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, it was,
is this
wild.
A dream, am I on drugs?
But so I thought, yeah, you know, I need to go back there, and I should pursue this, you know, this is like a good thing in my life, and I want to, you know, I want to do that.
Explore that more.
The crazy thing is when I got out there, like all these other opportunities started coming to me that like pushed me in another direction. And I, you know, I kept my personal practice going, but, well, I taught one class that was not in a formal setting. It was like out with some friends and,
you know,
on this guy's property. And he was like, I can't remember which martial art. I don't know if it was, jiu-jitsu or something like that, but, he was, you know, a martial artist and he, was asking me questions about, you know, yoga, what I knew about yoga. And he wanted, he's like, well, you know, could you do a quick thing, you know? And so I just did like a short, like 30 minute, you know.
Oh, did you enjoy it? Like when you were doing it?
I was so self-conscious and it had been so long.
I mean.
That I felt like, I mean, I did it, but, you know.
I would be self-conscious. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you get better over time anyways, right?
Just,
I mean.
Well, yeah, they say you should just jump in and do it and you'll become a better instructor. Like anybody can do it kind of thing. I think some people are more predisposed.
Yeah,
it comes more natural.
Yeah. I would have a hard time, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
we're both very self-critical
the...
and you know, we're judgmental.
It's amazing. I'm even doing this gosh darn podcast.
I mean, I give you props. I know. Do this.
Well, I think at some point.
I was nervous enough coming on just this episode. I say one episode. I'm sure I'll be on later.
No, you'll definitely be on again. But it definitely, it takes a lot. I mean, but you have to get out of your comfort zone though too, you know, like those that things that make you feel nervous or scared, you just got to do it, you know?
Jump in.
I mean, you'll never get better at anything if you don't make yourself feel awkward.
So that reminds me, this sounds so kind of corny, but I'm going to tell this story. So when I had decided, I'd already like kind of made the decision, like I'm going to go back, you know, to Maui and try this again, you know, try to find another job and, you know, see how long I can make a go out of it. Because things just weren't, you know, really working out here for me. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was in the teacher training program and we were doing a meditation. And I don't remember if it was a guided meditation or what, but there was a point where, like, you know, you're supposed to, like, ask a question and just, like, see what happens. Mm-hmm. And so we're, like, meditating and I'm, like, you know, posing the question, like, you know, how is this going to work out? Like, or how, you know, is this going to work out if I, you know, when I do this? Because I already made the decision. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of hard to describe because, you know, I guess unless you've like meditated or it's kind of like a dream in a sense that like, you know, you can have, just a feeling or, all of a sudden go into this little bit of a sleep, not a sleep state. I don't want to say that cause you're not falling asleep, but anyway, I started
it's like
to,
a day, it's like a dream state.
Yeah.
I mean,
it started to, you know, all of a sudden, there's a waterfall and I was at the top and I like jumped off and I was scared as I was going down. And when I hit the bottom, it was, you know, tall and I'm, you know, kind of scared of heights, believe it or not.
Yes. Yeah.
And,
I can attest
you know
to that.
That it's gotten worse as
I've
gotten older.
It's getting worse and worse every year.
But, I hit the water and it was like warm and there was rainbow. Wow. And at the end of the meditation, you know, I came out and I thought, whoa, it was almost like I was more in the sense or in the time that it was happening, I was like deep into it. So I wasn't really reflecting on what was happening. It was just happening. Mm-hmm. So then like when we finished meditation and I like opened my eyes, walk away, I was like, whoa, you know, like my conscious self or whatever was like, that was awesome.
Yeah,
you know?
Wow.
like this is a great sign.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it was self. You know, directed or what? Yeah. I was still, you know, again, being kind of judgmental and thinking, oh, I'm not going to jump to conclusions. This could have meant anything, but it's certainly a good
a waterfall.
Sign. Even if I'm just, you know, telling myself that my subconscious
convincing
is telling
yourself,
myself this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that felt pretty good. And I remember like mentioning it to the teacher being like, you wouldn't believe what just happened. Like it was awesome. And it empowered me for sure.
Right.
And,
to make that move.
Well, just to feel more comfortable about it, cause I already made a decision, you know,
but you're still going to always have some second guesses. Like, am I doing the right thing? So that was like kind of,
it's funny. I was
made it more concrete.
I was just, I think it was also the yoga teacher training and just that process. I was totally in this, you know, mindset of whatever happens is going to happen for a reason and it's going to work out. And
more confidence. I guess,
yeah, when you're young, like you said, you can take risks like that, or you're less, yeah, you're less worried about the outcome.
Yeah.
So it's probably a combination of those factors.
Right.
Yeah.
So Maui.
Yeah.
Maui.
And what expound on that. When I got out there, I was going to stay in the hostel, and then I get a call a week before I leave. And this guy I had lived with before, you know, he's like, hey, actually, we have a room that's become available. And I was like, what? And then he told me the story that there was a guy that was living there, and he actually died in the room. In the room. Oh, God. On the bed.
And you're like, I'll take it.
I was like, what?
Aww, and he's like, he was older, right?
He was older. Like, yeah. And he had moved out there because he was like,
to pass
it was towards the end of his life.
Right.
And again, like, I just thought, okay, you know, I learned more about that story and why he was out there and everything. And the timing was so good. I was like, okay, this is meant to be, you know.
Right.
So that worked out.
It was just like one thing after the next that like, and then just I got fell a job place.
Within like two. Okay. So then I couldn't get in touch with my friend who was a landscaper who was going to give me this, you know, job working with him. I was like, well, I'll figure something when I get out there, right? Because I was a little bit nervous about that. It's nicer to have something lined up. And it was just like totally MIA. I was like, oh man, I hope this guy isn't flaking on me. Mm-hmm. But then I was walking around. Kahului, the downtown area there, and just popping into some shops, and I talked to one of the shop owners, and these jobs are like not that easy to get because, there's just not that, it's like a lot of small towns.
Yeah.
There's not that many opportunities. And he said, well, we're actually hiring. And I said, really? The first one I went into, right?
Wow.
And he gives me the sheet. I remember thinking, well, you know, I got to check out some of the other ones too. So I was like, I don't want to like rush this. So I was, I was like, I'll take this and, you know, fill it out and I'll come back and submit it. And so then I went to some of the other shops because I wanted to work in the water sports, you know, business. And I got such a good vibe from that first guy. This guy,
I've
Masato.
Met him, I think, right?
Masato.
He's super nice. Nathan. Yeah.
And, I went back and I was like, oh my gosh, like I was thinking to myself, like this is the place. This is the guy who's the first one. A great feeling. So I fill it out like right there and I get to him. I was like, yeah, like really would love to, you know, work here. And he's like, pretty sure he just hired me right then. And he looked at my, you know, my resume and
over.
Everything. He read it over. He's like, okay, you know, when do you want to start? I was like, what?
What?
Like, really?
That's awesome.
And as a side note, and this is kind of tragic too. I don't know what the theme, what was going on with that theme, but the guy who was working there had worked there for like 8 or 10 years and he got cancer.
What?
And he had just had to leave to go back to the mainland to get cancer treatment. Yeah.
Oh, man.
And that's why that position was available.
Hmm.
And I was ready, you know, to work there for, it was great. I loved working there.
Yeah.
You know,
but you left there, but so how
but
did you get
I got
to Neil
some
Pride?
Other crazy opportunity. Yeah. I got another a job opportunity working for Neil Pry, which is the largest windsurf manufacturing, you know, company
in the
world.
Amazing.
Neil Pry North. You know, there's a few big ones, but
they're
kind of the top brand, or one of the top brands, I should say. Definitely one of the most well known.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the market share is of each one.
But, well, nobody cares about that.
But they were the only ones at the time that were still, that still had a design center that was building prototypes and testing them there on the island. Everyone else had kind of shrunk, and they had an opening, and I was like, wow, I can't pass this opportunity up either. So I jumped on that and worked there for a while. And this is all like, again, going back, like I had the full attention. And I was also vegetarian at this time.
So when did you become vegetarian though? When you went out to Maui?
No, well, so that started with the yoga teacher training program.
Oh, so you were, you started doing vegetarian here then.
And it was, it was suggested.
Well, because
not required, but suggested that you reduce your meat consumption or try to be a vegetarian
because of during the moral,
this 3-month program.
Right.
We learned, the different reasons why. Moral reasons and the
obviously the health benefits.
And the health benefits and how, I can't remember the name for the Sanskrit word right now, but, there's this like cleanliness or purity.
Oh.
And that's kind of like a prerequisite almost. It's one of the steps, towards like meditation. And,
oh, cool.
That, like, to help you with like deepening your practice, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought, well,
if you're going to do this, you might as well go all the way. Yeah.
And then, take a look. They also encouraged us to write a log, of what we ate every day and what we drank. And I was like, wow, I didn't realize I'm drinking alcohol every day. I didn't think I drank that much, but I was young.
That's what a lot of people say, though. Yeah. Like, if you start logging it, you're like, oh, I drink
mid-20s, I guess.
More often than I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. So then that was a big thing too. I was like, oh man, I got to stop this. And I cut that back. I was vegetarian. I did the vegetarian thing and I just kept going because it felt so good.
Right.
I
like that.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. It was a combination. I'm sure it was like a combination of all these factors.
I mean, you were active. Eating healthier. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Except for cheese. I remember opening the fridge one day and just seeing so much cheese, and I was totally...
That's what a lot of times happens to like vegetarians.
Because I'd given up meat. I guess I had certain cravings for cheese.
Well, it's the casein in there. So casein is the protein in dairy products that creates the same effect as drugs on your brain. So that's why people are so addicted to it. So
I learned that from you. Yeah.
I know. And you know this now from me, but no wonder,
Sense. Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of times when people go vegetarian, they will, replace the meat with just eating more cheese.
Yeah.
And then they could, it's almost like they're not being as healthy, obviously because they're eating a lot more saturated fat in dairy. And
then there's the potato chip vegan.
There's lots of different.
Unhealthy ways of being vegan.
Well, that's why I like to say that I'm a plant-based vegan because I, I focus a lot on whole foods, plant-based foods, but I am vegan for the moral and environmental reasons, So, yeah.
For me, it was definitely about health.
A lot of people. I mean,
the same thing with the yoga. The first time I was living in Hawaii, I remember... I started eating more salads. Like, I was like, I got to be healthier, even healthier.
Salad.
I'd already done that in college. And my friends used to make fun of me and say, what kind of bird food is Derek eating today? So I had this theme where it wasn't completely new to me, but I was doing kind of both for a while.
Yeah.
I was like healthy and unhealthy at the same time. And then when I was out there that first time, I was like, I'm just going to eat salad, because it's healthy.
Yeah.
So I was doing smoothies and salad. And my sister had my twin sister, Daphne, had recommended, I think it was Food for Life, green probiotic thingies. So I was taking those.
Yeah.
And I don't remember why, but I remember talking to a doctor out there and he was like, wait, so all you're eating is fruits and vegetables and... He's like, you're going to waste away, you need protein. And I wasn't vegetarian then. I was just eating more,
Salads and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. This is the first time. The second time I went out there, I was full on vegetarian.
Yeah.
And that time, I met friends out there who said the same thing. They're like, you're in the water. You're doing all these water sports.
I'm surprised out there.
You need, these guys were also kind of like me. They were, And they were like, you need to eat,
They
protein,
weren't the guy wearing the genie shoes.
No, no, not the same. But the second time I went out there, I that was kind of the attention was to learn more from the genie people.
Teach me your ways, genie people.
and I don't know. I can't, it's all, so much has happened. I learned some things, but it wasn't what I expected. It's never what you expect, right?
Life
is never how you plan it and what you expect. And in the end, I guess you get the lesson that you need. So
yeah,
I like to think
kind of
that.
A lesson to not plan too much because either you're going to be disappointed or I don't know. I don't want
to
say.
Well, you don't open yourself up to opportunity.
To new, yes. If you're fixated on one, on A to B, whatever it is,
too narrow.
Yeah, that's true.
Then you miss out. We talk about this like when we go to like visit a friend. If we go like, you know, we leave town, go visit friends. We don't often make a definite plan of like what we're gonna do when we get there. Like right. So we just got back from Austin.
So fun.
And that was awesome.
Yeah, and I didn't, I mean, I had kind of like looked up a few things that might be fun to do, but it's just like we're open to whatever. And we we went to cool yoga classes that, you know, weren't planned, and hikes, and
you open yourself up to different opportunities.
Yeah, I think that's definitely like a huge thing.
And our friends were great hosts.
Oh, such great hosts. I mean, I wish we could have just been there longer.
I know. I felt the same way.
I know. Yeah. Austin is a really cool city if you've never been there. Yeah. I'm writing a blog post about it right now. So,
are you?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Okay, so you're a vegetarian, but then it just slowly kind of social pressures kind of pushed you.
As I got more, you know, I guess, you know, I had more friends and and it's so funny to say that. Like, of course, when I first moved there, you don't know that many people that live there, right? And then, but when you start to be more social, you know, with other people who
live
there.
People are having parties and get-togethers.
Having parties.
Barbecues, whatever.
Yeah. Mm. And I just kind of slowly, it started with, you know, more like fish and seafood. And then I thought, I can't remember honestly when I started. I don't even think I started eating meat until I moved, like, you know, non-seafood meat until I moved back here. I think it was harder when I actually moved back here. I might have had like a little bit here and there before I left, but I was still on a better, you know, it's definitely healthier than when I moved back here. And when I moved back, it was like a double whammy.
Because I also like full on.
Yeah. I mean, Charleston's a drinking town.
Such a drinking town.
And for social.
That's all people do.
I mean, if you, it's really, I mean, it's true of a lot of cities.
Yeah.
And it's true of a lot of areas of the world that, especially, you know, like basically drinking goes with social activities. Yeah. And for a lot of people, if you don't participate, it makes it harder, you know, to meet people. And, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
I think
we all know. I know.
Probably understand.
So you move back and within a couple months, you met
this cute girl.
Moi.
Yeah. I was smitten.
The rest is sort of history. Yeah. And then you introduced me to quinoa, tempeh. I'd never heard of tempeh before in my life. And you were a really good cook compared to me.
Yeah.
I mean,
I was doing more cooking back
you
then.
You were definitely, I mean, I would go over to your house and you would cook me nice dinners. It was so fun. Yeah. I would cook you dinner too, but I don't know. It was just refreshing as well to have somebody who like.
Yeah, you weren't much of a cook at all. You said it yourself.
That's dramatic. Okay, I was a little
self-identified that way.
I was anti-cooking because I viewed it as some, you know, 1950s sexist
thing. You didn't want to get
females.
Wrapped
I didn't want to get wrapped up into and lumped that. Into that that yeah. people expected me to cook because I was a girl, you know. And so that's why I think I was a little anti it.
The pendulum swung far in the other direction and you said
throw
the baby out with the bathwater.
Pretty much, yeah. That was my one of my feminist stands, I guess. I don't feel that way anymore because I love to cook and I love food, so I love to experiment. But yeah, then our path to where we are now, I mean, I was not at all, which is so weird to think about now that I wasn't, I mean, even if I didn't care about my health that much at that point, it's always weird to me to think that I never thought about it on the moral side. You know, I've said this before, just because I love animals so freaking much. Like, how did I not? But like I said, growing up, I knew nobody who was vegetarian or certainly not vegan. So,
I mean, I'll be honest. I remember, you know, hearing the moral arguments and I guess, you know, being able to sympathize with them. And, but I never.
You couldn't empathize?
Yeah. I guess I couldn't empathize like fully. Like, I understood the argument, you know, rationally, and I you know, maybe I just try to make the same excuses that everybody does that come out.
Yeah.
And you don't want to, you know, learn about the factory farms. I knew a little bit about factory farms. I think I know more now.
The documentaries that we watched. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what
the ones that have come out, like Cowspiracy.
Yeah. And that was the first one you and I watched was Cowspiracy. And I, Earthlings. That was a more newer one. Yeah. Which is.
Yeah. I mean, that made it easier to, again, to take a more rational, like, yes, like, this is bad. Right. And we shouldn't be
participating.
But I remember feeling like, okay, I'm just going to reduce the amount of,
and
of
that's still
meat
better
that I consume, which is,
I mean,
you
if people
do
could
what
do
you
that,
can.
For gosh sakes,
I would. And I also remember thinking when people said, oh, but what about bacon? Thinking, yeah, that's a hard one. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to give that up. Yeah, I never said it out loud, but, you know, from time to time I have some. And now it's like so.
No way.
It's amazing to look back and not have any. I mean,
desire.
There's no desire there. Yeah. And the same thing with chicken. You know, I was eating more Chick-fil-A here in the South.
Yeah.
You know?
People love the Chick-fil-A.
I did. I was one of those people.
I did. I was a Chick-fil-A nut. Yeah, I love Chick-fil-A so much. I mean, that was really the only fast food that I like really, really loved.
But if I go back all the way to.
But it's that batter, y'all. It's the batter that tastes good, not the plain, not the chicken.
Well, and as you've described in previous podcasts about the gut microbiome and, you know, the connection with the vagus nerve to the brain, it's that which is feeding
your cravings.
Our cravings. And I remember the first time I experienced that was when I was doing those smoothies and salads.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, like I said, I wasn't even vegetarian that first time, but I was like, I'm going to eat a lot of smoothie and a lot of salads. And then I would go to the gas station, like pump gas, and and I'd go in to pay, and I'd see, you know, like a 2-for-1 on the candy bars. I'd be like, oh,
Snickers.
I'll get a candy bar, you know. Oh, yeah, Snickers.
That was my favorite, too.
Yeah. So I get like 2 Snickers bars, and I remember this so clearly. Like, by the time I got back to my car to open the door, both Snickers bars were gone. And I remember looking at my hands and
I blacked out.
And then I would do that, and I remember thinking, what just happened?
Wow.
And then...
Because you had these that microbiome was not
cravings
fixed,
for sugar that I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
I remember, like, you know, going, like, walking around the corner from where I was living to pick up some groceries, and as part of them were, you know, a little pint of ice cream. And then, like, when I'd go home and, like, eat some of the ice cream, and just couldn't stop.
That's so funny. Like, you don't like ice cream at all now.
No. I don't even, you know.
No, he never eats ice cream, y'all.
I don't even really eat the Not-A-Moo. I mean, I
have
it with our
friends. No, he doesn't have a sweet tooth at all
but
anymore.
But I don't have the sweet tooth at all.
Yeah, so he changed his microbiome completely.
But I couldn't take one bite without finishing the whole thing before. You know? Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was my first memory of, it, you know, that experience, of that strong... Mm-hmm. Like kind of
urge
kind of thing. Yeah. That's but it's possible
to change. I know. Change, I mean, I hear this story so many times that, you know, people will say, well, I just really like the taste of this or that. And I'm like, well, you think you do. And you do right now because of your bacteria in your gut.
It's
yeah.
not made up.
But it's the bacteria. It's not really your
but
you
it
know.
Can change.
Yeah, it can change. And you can, you can change your taste buds. I mean, I crave mushrooms.
I hated mushrooms when we met.
For 28 years of my life, and would pick them, or long, I guess 30 years probably. It's even newer. And I would literally pick them out of anything and everything. They could be tiny and chopped up, and I wouldn't eat that darn thing. Ugh. It was a texture thing, too. But, no. I like mushrooms now, so if that shows anything, you can change it all.
So here we are.
Here we are. And you feel so much better, right?
I do.
I mean, yeah.
I feel...
I could never go back.
Yeah. Just as good, you know, as I've ever felt. You hear people say, you know, I'm X age and feel better than I did when I was in my 20s. And
I'm
starting to experience that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I mean, when I see, like, posts or something of people... I don't know, joking about their age and how, I really feel, you know, 35 or I really feel 40. And I'm like, that's not, it shouldn't be like that, you know, just because you're 50
a lot of the
or
age-related
all of the age-related
stuff is not really
so-called illnesses. Yeah. Or pains or
it's
whatever.
Lifestyle related.
It's lifestyle related. It's inflammation. It's what we're eating. It's, you know, being inactive. It's all of these things. I mean, it's your lifestyle. Yeah. So
my recovery time is better, you know, when I'm really active, like doing a lot of water sport activity. I remember in my early to mid 20s being very sore,
mm-hmm.
you know, the next day or a couple of days.
Yeah.
And I just always thought that that was, you know, a thing. And again, it's possibly also because I am in better like physical shape. Right. I always thought I was in good physical shape,
right.
But I just still had like a really, you know, tougher time recovering. Whereas like I haven't felt that in, I don't even know, you know,
well, this
in like
is
eight,
why,
10, more than 10 years. Yeah. I think it's been like 10 years. I wake up like more tired, you know, in the morning, like
sometimes,
a little bit groggier.
Yeah.
Like that's a common thing. Just, I guess, cause my body still is doing that recovery thing.
Right.
But my muscles and like joints and that kind of thing.
You have low inflammation.
Low inflammation.
Super
yeah.
Low inflammation. I mean, this is why so many like NFL players and all these hard, like
right.
really serious athletes.
That's why they're doing it.
Are swearing by it.
Gives
because
them an edge.
Their recovery time is
yeah.
nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Which there's a movie coming out, everyone, called The Game Changers, which we've been waiting on for
a year
for this freaking movie.
Yeah.
James Cameron is the director. Dean Ornish is in it, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and then all of these like NFL, like the Titans are in it because I think like half of their team is plant-based now. And anyways, all these different Olympic stars and whatnot who are plant-based. And I think it's coming out September something, 22nd. Anyways, you can Google it, The Game Changers, and see if it's playing in your area. But yeah, I mean, I've never felt better. I don't feel whatever my age is, you know? So
I remember when I was in high school, I don't follow college sports mm-hmm. all that closely because I'm just not like a big, you know, sports person like
right.
that.
That kind of sports.
But I remember having friends who did, and like Duke basketball was like really good. They were always, you know, in the Final Four, winning every other year, it seemed like. I don't know if they're still good like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I remember learning about that. At the time, and then reading that, I think his name was like Krzyzewski or something. Mike Krzyzewski was the coach. He was teaching his players meditation.
What?
And I remember thinking, huh, I wonder how much that has to do with it.
Wow.
And you know, these kids were like super well-disciplined, smart, you know, kids and athletic kids. But I feel like, you know, that was probably
big
thing.
Absolutely.
Once I learned
let's talk
more
about your
meditation
experience
later.
With meditation because
oh no.
Well, I've gone through stages, which I'm in a lull right now with my meditation practice.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to pick it back up because you had such a profound, I mean, obviously you were eating healthier too, but
right.
like meditation,
it's a combination of
was part of, you know,
my yoga practice.
Yeah,
yeah.
Your yoga practice, and you saw like healing effects on your body
right.
through meditation. Yeah.
Right. So the second time I was living out in Maui, you know, I learned meditation, my yoga teacher training program. It's the first time I was introduced to it. Had the rainbow waterfall experience before I went out there. I had a couple other experiences that like maybe I'll share in a later podcast, but I don't really want to talk too much about right now.
Yeah.
But from the physical benefits, when I went out to Hawaii, I met a meditation teacher, and I think it was like in the second year I was there, and he opened up this this meditation class in Paia, and it was like a yoga studio, but only for meditation. I was like, whoa, so cool, you know, that someone
cool,
could do this.
Yeah.
And I lived close by. In fact, I lived closer to the location where he held these, sessions than where he lived. And so he asked me, you know, would you be open to, you know, open up the studio at like 5:30 or whatever it was, at 6 a.m. And I was like, sure, you know, cause yeah. I was like trying to get back into a more regular practice.
Right.
Even at that point, cause you know, I was being more social and I wasn't doing it as regularly. And I met him and I did that for him, you
right.
know? And so, you know, long story short, started having like a daily practice again, had like the biggest physical benefit I noticed immediately was the need for less sleep. Didn't matter how active I was, you know, how much water sport activity I did that day, or what I did the rest of the day, I needed significantly less sleep. And I would just like wake up like bing, 5:30 in the morning, you know, not groggy at all. Mm-hmm. Whereas like I've always needed a lot of sleep. I feel like I'm one of those people that needs like 8 to 9. You know, they say you need 8 hours, and some people it's like a range 7 to 9. I'm like always been closer to that 9 for sure. And it was wild. It was like you could do like 30 minutes of meditation a day and it like chopped off 2.5 hours of sleep. Like no question. If you do it every day, that was the experience I was getting.
Wow.
That was like one of the first experiences. And so much so that at some point, like I was like, what do I do with myself now? You know, 6:30.
That is crazy.
Done meditating. Now what? I don't have to go to work for like,
how long were you meditating? Like in each time? Like,
you know,
like 30 minutes, an hour or.
Well, once I got into it, I was doing like 30 to 45 minutes. At first it was, 20 minutes, I think, is what the class was, 20 to 30. And then you could stay a little bit longer if you wanted to. And they taught, and I still hear this, that you have to get at least 10. You know, like once, if you can be very still, and you know, with your body, and for at least 10 minutes, then you'll start to feel, you know, that release and that next stage, so to speak, of meditation. And I found that to be true for sure. And whether you go 15 or 25 or 45 didn't seem to make much of a difference after that, you know, because it the time goes by different speed.
I need to get back into
it. And then you said healing. Yeah. So I started noticing like scars I had from when I was rollerblading when I was a kid. You know, I had these scars on my legs because I was like big into rollerblading.
Me too.
we have that in common.
I never wore knee pads or any of that.
But they started dissolving, you know, going away. Like, and I had, you know, stitches on my thigh, and then I couldn't see the scar anymore. And I was like, what else had changed? Like, it had to have been that.
Yeah, it was totally that.
You know?
I mean, what I've read online, like, it can heal all kinds. It can heal your body. It can heal.
But then I did have a negative effect in that, again, towards that end, I started feeling, I guess, almost like an anxiousness, you know, where I was done meditating and I was like, now what? What's next kind of thing. And it was almost like I had too much time on my hands. No, it was weird.
Oh my gosh.
Anxiety is the closest word I could use for it, but I remember being 100% aware of it. Yeah, this restlessness feeling and not knowing how to get rid of it, which is funny because, like, isn't that why people are supposed to meditate?
Yeah.
You're like, get rid of that feeling? No. Yeah. Like, that's not why I did, but that was a weird kind of side effect.
So, did you stop, like, doing it as often or?
I moved back, you know.
Sorry, and that was me.
Everything changed.
Oh, we should have done meditation together.
No, but it was like
I needed meditation. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but we were in a different mental space.
I know. Everything.
And I was in a different mental space. I was ready for like, you know, more social stuff and
parties. Happy hours.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was good.
Everything moved, you know, on the path in the timing that I think it that it needed to.
And then the other part of it was, you know, this is cool and all, and it's like good for my body and it's good for my health, and but what is kind of like the end goal here, you know? We have these anticipations and these goals going in, and I certainly had, you know, my reasons. But at a certain point, you know, I also had other goals in my life that were almost conflicting, right? So like, you know, being able to have a more social life was a conflicting goal with that. And I actually remember, like, when we were dating, you know, I was for sure wanting to be, you know, out in those more social settings together with you and with our friends, But at the same time, I also remember feeling like I wish I could dial it down a bit, like not have it this much, but just a little bit. But I knew that like the people I was with were not in, you know, it would have been more difficult. So I just kind of went with it, so to speak, right?
Yeah, that made me feel bad.
Well, but it was a personal decision too, right?
I mean, it worked out.
Because it was like, this is what I, you know, this is what I want at this time. This is a different goal. And there are other goals too that kind of conflicted. So, I mean, how do you make money meditating, you know, unless you're teaching yoga.
Yeah, but the meditating and that kind of stuff, I mean, I think...
I mean, there's life too, right? So we have to have careers and...
I know, but all these people, I mean, and trying to encourage you to wake up early. I mean, this is... I know, there's only enough time, but like people always are like, oh, well, then you wake up 30 minutes earlier. Like you have to change things.
And I had the time, for sure, right? Yeah. Like I said, like
I didn't need...
When I moved back, I was like, I was going to go back to grad school and finish... I was, you know, and I did, I re-enrolled. It was like for a week and, I got a full-time job within a month, you know, less than 4 weeks. Oh, I was working 40 hours a week, but you don't understand. Like I knew I could do it all because of what I had just experienced. I was like, I'm going to meditate and I'm going to, you know, study from 6:30 till 9 or whatever, and then do this. And
you had it all planned out.
But it was a little bit. Again, I was biting off more than I could chew because, mm-hmm. like, I had a great job that, you know, a friend of mine here hooked me up with, and I loved working for him. He was my boss, and, you know, like I said, I re-enrolled in school, but I met you, and I had a pretty strong feeling that at that time, like, I wasn't going to be able to do it all again, like mm-hmm. I did before. Yeah. In the more, you know, social aspects of life crept in, the less time there was to like mm-hmm. maintain that practice, and it was harder.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't have the time also because I lost it. So I made a decision. Yeah. And I made a decision that like social life and career and work, you know, were going to be my priorities.
Right.
So I kind of put it off to the side a little bit.
Right.
And then it came back to us, you know, when you got sick.
Yeah.
And then we explored that whole aspect, that whole journey together.
Yeah.
So here we are.
But both of our meditation practices are not where I'd like them to be. I mean, I would like to be able to get up in the morning and
mm-hmm.
I mean, even if it's like 10 minutes, you know, and there were like a couple weeks there that I was doing really well.
Your intention, right? What's our intentions and our goals?
Well, we watched Stranger Things last night until 12 o'clock. So
maybe we binge the end of
there is no time for meditation then. And then, and then I woke up. But I'm going to get back into
life's
it for sure.
A balancing act, right?
Yeah. And I think these things do come in waves sometimes, you know, and that's okay.
So in yoga, there's this like theory that, you know, there's different stages of life and maybe this planted a seed in me that was like, oh, it's okay to like do other things, you know,
right now, in this stage.
Exactly. Yeah. And that I can't remember what they're called, but there's like four stages, I think. And you know, there's like the growth stage and, you know, the learning and adulthood and having like those responsibilities. Right. And then there's like this final stage, which I think is called sannyasin, which is when traditionally, I think if you go back thousands of years, people would basically like give up their family and give up their, you know, not just social life, but their family, and then like walk into the woods.
What?
You know, and oh my explore gosh. The spiritual side of life.
Wow.
So at a certain age.
I would be angry at you.
If you woke up one.
You just walked in.
One morning and.
You're like Forrest Gump gone. And you just walk. You just kept walking. You just kept on walking. I would be really sad. Don't do that. We can do it together, friend.
All right. Let's do it together.
Let's do it together. Yeah. Walk into the woods with our cats. Okie doke. Well, obviously you and I could sit here and chat.
Forever.
Literally all day. So we will
that's a good introduction.
Wrap it up until you come back next time, right?
Until part two.
Part two. Okie doke. Peace and plants.
Peace and plants.
Isn't that story so crazy? I still just can't fathom the fact that he didn't breathe for like 2 decades of his life. It still blows my mind. Like I can't imagine that. But I really just love any of these transformation stories. You know, I think we're kind of conditioned, at least for the past several decades, to think that only pills can change our life or heal us. And it's stories like these that show that we have the tools right at our fingertips by what we're putting in our bodies, by exercise, and by changing our lifestyle. So I think it also, you know, our chat makes me think about how I need to do more meditation. And I think it can be a very beneficial tool for all of us to, you know, heal our bodies and also combating stress and just trying to balance life in this, you know, modern day world that we live in. So I hope you enjoyed the interview. I certainly did. And until next time, my friends, peace and plants.